My next guest probably knows a thing or two about Bruno and boxing. He's the author of This Boxing Game, A Study in Beautiful Brutality. John White delves into the world of beautiful brutality, visiting gyms on both sides of the Atlantic. Through compelling memoirs, we encounter the likes of Freddie Roach, Manny Pacquiao, James Toney and Josh Taylor. Boxing, is it good? Is it bad? My next guest can tell us all about it. Delighted to be joining me live on the line from Edinburgh, John White. John, good afternoon to you.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
The pleasure is all mine. Boxing is visceral. You describe it as beautiful brutality, but still perhaps now more popular than it has been in the past 20 years.
Well, indeed, I think it's because boxing taps into something that is innate within us. It's the sport that takes us closest to our primal being, the skills needed to survive. As a primal being in our natural state, courage, aggression, deception, evasion, speed, all those are on display in a boxing ring. And I think that's why it taps into something that's really innate within us all.
I mean, if you think about it, you know, we live in this 21st century, everything we're supposed to be in, we have 87 different types of gender, we are supposed to be, you know, in a technologically advanced world. If you think about it, there should be really no place for boxing. But again, it taps into something visceral.
Yeah, that's because of all the comfort, all the technological advancement, all the comforts and prosperity we enjoy. There's still this need for risk to test ourselves, and the audience gets to do it viscerally when they watch these two fighters in the ring. That's why the atmosphere in a boxing show is so impassioned, because they're throwing every punch with the fighters. It's tribal. They follow a certain fighter. They have a favourite, and they get emotionally involved. Look at the following that Ricky Hatton used to take around to Vegas and all over the world when he fought. Look at the following that Tyson Fury has. This is a man who's transcended the sport, as many boxers down through history have, because it's also a societal thing. It has an impact on society in general. You see things in a boxing ring that you can never do in polite society. You can bay for blood. You can applaud violence, albeit a controlled form of violence. So it taps into that primitive need for a release of that kind of energy.
Do you think, you just said, do you think that we need something in our psyche that's buried in there? We are all cavemen stroke cavewomen, and we need, if you like, a safe space to get that out.
Absolutely. You see it, you also see an example of that in a football match, in a football crowd. So there is something within us that we still have this animal instinct, and it needs to be tapped into, or it can be expressed in damaging ways, more damaging ways. And that's why boxing, I think, has such a place in our society in 2020.
So how did you go about, because it's an interesting concept, but you've gone forward and you've examined this on both sides of the Atlantic. So tell me a little bit about your journey and how you came to put this book together.
Well, it covers a 20-year period from 1995 to 2015, when in 1995 I first met Freddie Roach through a friend of mine who was a young professional boxer at the time, a quite rising, promising prospect by the name of Brad Welsh, sadly no longer with us. And he went to LA after having six or seven fights in Scotland, and Freddie Roach liked what he saw, and he started training him. So I went over to visit Brad on a holiday, and I was starting to write then, and I wanted to do some stories on him for the local paper, and that's when I got into the sport myself. I enjoyed the training. Prior to that, I'd lifted weights and done a bit of running, and I just loved the atmosphere in the gym. I mean, I had no aspirations myself to take boxing up seriously, but the training is fantastic, and sparring, I talk about the first time I sparred and the fear, I couldn't sleep the night before, and what you go through, and it just makes me admire these guys even more. They do it in front of millions of people at the highest level. They test themselves, they face their fears, and I just think it's a wonderful thing.
Because when you start sparring with somebody, there's an adrenaline rush from that. So yeah. You've talked about your fear, you get the flight or fight response. But when you're, I mean, you can imagine it, can't you? Walking in Madison Square Garden or Vegas, and you step out there in front of crowds. But if it all goes horribly wrong, you're never more exposed and more naked than you are in front of you being, you know, fighting somebody you don't know or somebody you fear with the whole world watching you.
Yeah, you obviously risk serious damage and worse, but you also risk humiliation, being dominated by another man in a boxing ring in front of thousands and thousands of people and potentially millions. The most famous exemplar of that was Floyd Patterson, the former world heavyweight champion, who talked about when he lost, he would hide away for days. He'd actually wear a wig and a false glasses to disguise himself to come out of the arena. He was so scared to lose, and he lost quite handsomely against the great Sonny Liston. And he talked about that. You could tell that it scarred his psyche. And his trainer, the great Customato, who was also the famous trainer of Mike Tyson, he was the only trainer who actually spoke honestly about fear. I think boxers utilize the rhetoric of warrior, you know, I have no fear, and you know, I'm indomitable, I'm invincible. But all human beings feel fear, or certainly nerves, before they go into the ring. This is just a kind of facade to try and make the other guy think that this, that they're fighting someone that they cannot beat. But Customato talked about fear. He says every fighter feels fear. It's how they utilize it, how you channel the fear, and that determines those who succeed in the ring and those who don't. There are many stories of great fighters in the gym. They look fantastic in sparring, but when they get in the arena under the lights, they freeze, because they can't perform under that kind of pressure. And I think that ability to perform under the type of pressure when you need to is what separates the champions and the great champions from those who don't reach those heights.
And you talked about the training and the discipline. And one of the things about boxing is that it's very much, it's perhaps part of the romance or the compelling story of that, is the fact that, you know, boxing takes rough stones and turns them into diamonds if they're successful, you could say.
Absolutely. I mean, what boxers go through, the uninitiated don't know what they go through to get ready for a fight. The training camps, the rigors, the grueling morning road work, the sparring, the conditioning work, paying attention to diet, preparing themselves mentally for the struggle to come. I mean, our instincts tell us that to walk away from violence, to walk away from potential violence, especially when you're facing someone who is physically at least an equal match, but they walk into it. They walk into that danger. They do it willingly. Of course, some of them at the top level and professional get paid millions and millions of dollars and pounds to do that, but still, they're not thinking about the money when they're walking to that ring. They're going mano a mano with someone who's trying to take their head off or render them semi-conscious or unconscious before they can do it to them. So it takes a lot. It really is a trial of the human spirit in a boxing ring. And I do think even fighters in gyms who spar and with no aspiration to take it any further than that, they experience a kind of transcendence, especially for people from low-income backgrounds who don't have any other way to experience that. They become more than what they were when they went in. I've seen kids coming into boxing gyms for the first time. They lack confidence, they're meek, they're diffident. 3 months later, they're completely transformed, and in a very good way. You know, you can't walk around swaggering around the boxing gym. It's a very honest place. If you try and blag it and you try and throw your weight around, you're going to get found out. Everybody takes a punch, no matter who good you are when you get in the ring. So you learn to respect other people as well as yourself. As I say, it's a transformational experience.
And talking about transformational, I mean, for a sport that is brutal, beautiful brutality, as you've called it, there are figures within it who you just need to mention the names and you are instantly transported back. You talked about Floyd Patterson, and there's a brilliant book called When We Were Kings, which you must be familiar with, and yes. Sonny Liston and that golden age of early 60s boxing. It's a real look into the psyche, as yours is indeed. But you think of Ali, and the whole world stops when you mention Ali. You think yes. about, you know, figures who have, if you like, united Jim Watts, a boxer here, yes. united Barry McGuigan. You know, I mean, that's, yeah. you know, the way that, and to a certain extent, Fury, his struggle, his, you know, his, yeah. his comeback have unite people in a way that, you know, football doesn't do that. You know, horse racing doesn't do that. Yeah. But these figures, you know, they're raw, their suffering is raw, their journeys are raw, but they can, Manny Pacquiao, you know, can be a force for good.
Yes, these every figure you mentioned has played a huge role, not just in boxing history, but in world history, in histories of society. Barry McGuigan reuniting the warring factions in the north of Ireland in the 1980s. Muhammad Ali is making a stand for black civil rights and against the Vietnam War. Even Joe Louis, there's a remarkable story that Martin Luther King once told in a speech where he talked about how in the 1950s in one of the southern states they were trialling lethal gas as a method to execute prisoners, and this young man who was the object of this trial, just before the gas started to rise in the death chamber, they were recording his last words, and his last words were, "Save me, Joe Louis, save me, Joe Louis, save me, Joe Louis." So it just shows you the power of boxing and the power of great boxers to inspire people, to give people hope who otherwise have none. And that's why I think boxing enjoys such a commanding place in our culture in 2020.
And I've had the pleasure of interviewing Ricky Hatton face to face, and there are, you know, for people who make their lives from the most physical of sports, they're very they have a sort of, a lot of them have a sort of very zen-like quality to them. How did you find speaking with them and when you approach people for the book?
Well, I found them all fantastic. I found them all very relatable, very, very thankful if you support them, if you show interest in them, because they know it's a very lonely sport in many ways. They go through highs and lows that most people would never experience in their lives. They roll the dice. But when you get them on their own, when they're not preparing for a fight, when they're not in that fight mode, I found them all to be very, very amenable and great to be around. They've got fantastic backstories of adversity and struggle and tenacity and resilience. And you cannot but be so impressed. It inspires you, whatever you're doing. For me, it's been writing. It inspires you to keep going, because you know that success in life, whatever field, it's about consistency, it's about tenacity, and it's about never giving up. And that's boxing.
You spoke with, obviously, as I said, quite a few figures in the game. What was the one that stuck in your mind, or what example or piece of boxing history sort of sticks in your mind as summing up, encapsulating what the boxing game is all about?
Well, I'd have to say, talking about the fighter who I used to see close up on a daily basis was back in 2003, when I was privileged to watch James Toney training for his fantastic comeback against Vasily Jirov, first of all, when he took the cruiserweight title. And then 6 months later, he stepped up to heavyweight for his first fight against Evander Holyfield. And watching that man spar was just unbelievable. It was like poetry in motion. And those of your listeners who are familiar with boxing will know what I mean. Just look at the tapes of James Toney, one of the greatest defensive fighters of all time, the way he perfected the shoulder roll before Floyd Mayweather Jr. came to popularise it, the way he could find space in the tightest of spots, the way he could fight against the ropes. I've never seen anything like it up close. I remember the first time I saw Manny Pacquiao in the ring. I was actually training at Wildcard Boxing Club in Hollywood, and it was the year 2000, and suddenly this huge noise erupted from the ring behind me, and everyone in the gym that day stopped to look, and here's this skinny guy, nobody had ever knew who he was, throwing punches like rapid fire, jumping around the ring like a grasshopper. And as I recount in the book, I looked at him for a few minutes and I thought, nah, he's not going to make it. So yeah, there's many, many stories like that in the book. It's very rich in those kinds of stories, and I'm very privileged to have been around these guys. I really am.
Like I said, 10 years ago you might have thought that boxing was on the way out. It was split. It was riven. There were the IBA, the WBA, etc., etc. Yeah. Now it's never been stronger. Now there's never been such a will. Apart from say the pure Hollywood of fights that we've seen, like with mixed martial arts and the whole thing. But we have three at least great fighters with Fury, Joshua, and Deontay Wilder. So boxing has never been more popular, more headline. The fight was surrounded by the good and the great of Hollywood, and everybody was tuning in for it. It made the national news. What do you think that says about us then?
Well, again, it goes back to what we need. We need that release of that animal instinct to be able to sort of give vent to those primal instincts, primal urges for violence, to see the beauty of violence. Boxing is a beautiful sport to the uninitiated. Of course, it just looks like two men or two women, as increasingly the case is, wailing away at each other. But it's a highly skillful, it's a cerebral sport as much as it is a physical sport. It's human chess. And the price for making a mistake when you're trying to work out what your opponent's going to do and trying to take advantage of mistakes he makes before he can take advantage of yours is the difference between winning and losing, between a world title and not winning a world title, between making huge amounts of money going forward and not. So the risks, the rewards, the stakes are so high. I think boxing has enjoyed a resurrection and a comeback in the way it has, largely because of MMA, ironically, because until MMA came along, there were so many mismatches in boxing. Promoters didn't want to risk their champions against other champions. They didn't want to risk unbeaten records. And so people got bored with it. It lacked that excitement because they knew the result before the fight began, and they weren't going to pay the money to watch what they considered to be a con. But MMA changed the game, because in MMA, they're all evenly matched, and there's no harm in losing. Look at Conor McGregor. He's lost a few times, and he's still popular, and people still want to see him fight. And I think boxing learned its lesson, because MMA was starting to eclipse boxing, certainly in the States. And I think the powers that be in boxing understood that we have to change how we run the sport, otherwise it's going to become marginal. And they did do that, to their credit, and that's why boxing is back in a way that it's never been before, probably since the 1960s.
The book is called This Boxing Game, A Journey in Beautiful Brutality. It's out now. Is it with Pitch Publishing?
Pitch Publishing, yes.
It's by John White. John, if people want to find you on the social media or on the web, is there a website? Do you have a social media presence?
Yeah, John White 1, Twitter. You can catch my writing on not just boxing, politics, culture, and other things. Medium platform under John White, John White Medium. And I'm also on Instagram, John White.
And the book's going to be available as well as a download on the TRE Virtual Bookshop. I only asked the question, after this one, what are you up to next?
Well, I mean, there's talks for me to write the autobiography of a very successful current fighter whom I can't name because we're in talks. But I'd actually like to write a book on the history of Cuban boxing. Cuban amateur boxing is regaled around the world, and I do quite fancy a book on that. I think it would be an interesting read.
And when things get a little bit too much for you, you can't probably do it at the moment. Do you ever just sort of say, "Oh, forget it," and slip on the pads and head down to your local gym?
Always. 25 days a week. Even now, this morning, I was shadow boxing in the woods. almost got arrested.
Brilliant. Well, listen, it's a brilliant and thoughtful book. It's called This Boxing Game, A Journey in Beautiful Brutality. Go check it out. It's by John White. John, thank you so much for your time today.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.